chronicles these events in a new memoir called Public Enemy, Confessions of an American Dissident, and he joins us now to talk about them. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about that statement that started it all. In fact, you know, we have a little clip of that. Let's listen.
Our opponent is someone who sees America as imperfect enough to pal around with terrorists who targeted their own country.
Now, as it turns out, Sarah Palin was talking about you. How did you feel when you first heard that and you realized that what you had sort of feared and your children had feared could be coming down the pike had indeed happened?
Yeah, it did happen, and it happened initially. You played the Sarah Palin clip, which is quite famous, where she talks about palling around, which is incidentally what I wanted to call the book, but my publisher insisted that Public Enemy was a better title.
She might have been right on
that. You know, it's sometimes difficult to remember, but the person who generated that narrative in the first place was Hillary Clinton. And the place where it really exploded into my life was the debate that George Stephanopoulos moderated between Clinton and Obama near the end of the primary season. And the narrative was simple. And the narrative was, here's this charismatic, beautiful, very brilliant guy. We don't know much about him. He's kind of a mystery man. But let's take a look at his friends. And his friends include a black nationalist minister, a Palestinian scholar, and me, a so-called former domestic terrorist, actually a professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago for decades. But nonetheless, that was the focus. And the trick was not only to demonize those three characters, but then to add the traditional American problem, which is guilt by association. And so Clinton began that, and Palin, and it didn't work for her, and Palin and McCain picked it up. But the night, you say, how did it affect me? Well, the night that it came over the television in that ABC debate, I had my graduate students over for dinner and seminar, and we were finishing the seminar, and someone turned on the TV, and just as they did, Stephanopoulos was asking about Jeremiah Wright and then about me. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a surreal scene for me. My students, when my name was mentioned, when Stephanopoulos said, well, what about your friendship with Bill Ayers? My students fell to the floor, several of them, and one looked at me and said, that guy has the same name as you. To which one of my students said, that's because he is the same guy.
Oh,
and
boy.
It got weirder from there. But it was a strange and unprecedented experience for me, for sure.
Now, I know that you haven't disavowed your past with the Weather Underground. You clarified things in the past, but you haven't said, I'm sorry and I regret all of this. On the other hand, you know, you've got this life as a professor at the University of Chicago, and it's a new life. It's one you've had for a while, and the stuff we're talking about and the stuff that came up with Hillary Clinton and with Sarah Palin, it is in your past. How did it feel to have something like that follow you again and still be nipping at your heels after all these years?
Well, you know, I actually think there's a simple explanation. I've never denied, you know, what I did in my life, and I'm neither shy about it, nor have I, you're right, I haven't disavowed it, nor have I been ashamed of it. It is something that was part of my life, and I was a student leader in opposition to the war in Vietnam. I'm very proud of that. When the war in Vietnam couldn't be ended after years and years and years of struggle and the black freedom movement turning against it and vets turning against it, the majority of the American people were against the war, and yet we couldn't stop it. By not stopping the war, every week that it plunged forward, 6,000 people a week were being murdered. And we were desperate to find ways to stop it, those of us who thought ending the war was a critical, you know, kind of principled place to be. So, yes, that all happened. And it's not exactly true that I have no regrets. I mean, that's often said about me, but it's just not true. I'm 68 years old, and everyone has regrets, no matter how old they are. My 9-year-old granddaughter has regrets. But at the same time, what I don't regret is throwing my life and my body and my energy into ending that genocidal war. I'm actually quite pleased with that. But I think that, let me add one other thing. I think there's a reason that we can't get over Vietnam. And the reason is we haven't yet, as a country, come together and told the truth about it. Because we haven't told the truth about it, we still kind of are anguished about it.
Why would you say we haven't told the truth about it? Because I think it's largely acknowledged that it was an unwinnable war. Republicans and Democrats have said that. What is the part that's not true?
Well, I mean, I think that John Kerry came home when he was a young officer from Vietnam in the mid-60s had testified before Congress and said, we commit war crimes in Vietnam every day, not as a matter of choice, but as a matter of policy. That was the truth. That was the unvarnished truth. That's what he said. He's been running away from that statement ever since. But the reason I say that it's still that, for example, that truth is not acknowledged by us. That means that everyone who participated in it should, in either in the war itself or in those times or in opposition to that war, should come forward and tell the truth about what they did. For John McCain to run as a war hero is absurd. My brother was a war hero. He deserted rather than go to Vietnam and fight. To me, that's a heroic thing to do. Bob Kerry, who admittedly killed two elderly Vietnamese in their hut outside of a village to prevent them from crying out a warning, running for the U.S. Senate, governor of Nebraska. I mean, these things are not accounted for. And that's why you can get John McCain or Henry Kissinger still being the wise men of foreign policy. But they haven't accounted for the crimes of that moment. And they're serious crimes.
They are serious crimes, and at the same time, the truth is subjective. You're never going to get everybody to agree on a truth out of Vietnam, including a Vietnam vet like Kerry and someone like you who was fighting on the other side. That's not something.
No, Kerry and I absolutely agreed in the mid-60s, but no, I wouldn't say the truth is simply subjective. What I would say is the truth is a quest. It's a search. It's not an end point. And no, we won't all agree on every fact. But the truth is that, say, take South Africa, which was roiled in conflict for decades and decades. They went through a process where people told the truth. Everybody didn't agree about what the truth was, but people came forward and spoke openly about what they did, how they participated in apartheid or in the anti-apartheid struggle. People who were against apartheid made mistakes and committed crimes and errors as well, and they accounted for that. We've never done anything like that. We still talk about Vietnam. You're right. I mean, there's kind of a consensus in the folks you hang out with that it was a mistake. But even the way you said it was a mistake. It was unwinnable. Or another term that's used constantly is it was a quagmire. A quagmire is something you trip into accidentally. You put your foot in the swamp and then it sucks you in. That's not what happened at all. We marched in under the banner of a lie, just as we marched into Iraq under the banner of a lie. And then we committed a pretty serious set of genocidal tactics, including killing over 3 million people. And that's not accounted for. The interesting thing is, I don't know if you've been to Vietnam, but in Vietnam, mm-hmm. they are so over the American war. They've moved beyond it. And that's because they have a shared narrative that has at least the ring of honesty to them. We don't have such a thing.
All right. Well, we'll keep talking with Bill Ayers in just a moment. We're talking about his new book, Public Enemy. But first, we are in the midst of our fall membership drive.
Rob Ferret here with Lori Skelton. Listeners like you are an important source of WPR's income. Your gift takes just a few minutes of your time, helps keep conversations like this one going strong. Invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 66 listeners who are now members. Thank you so much for those pledges. The goal now, 35 pledges by 6 o'clock. We've set up goals to help stay on track, to know that we have the money to pay for programs you rely on. So help meet this hour's goal with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You hear great conversations all day long on the Ideas Network, sometimes fun, sometimes serious, sometimes provocative. This is a unique radio service in the nation, and your support makes it possible. Pledge now for the station you rely on and you enjoy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio, we've made it as easy as possible. All we need is your name and contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
You can save time and money, use a credit card if you can, or start automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. You choose how to give, and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We were talking earlier about the fast pace of our technology. The world is changing at a fast pace, and keeping up is harder and harder every single day. No matter what is going on in your own life or in the news what's going on in Wisconsin, the nation, the world. Wisconsin Public Radio is seeking out the stories for you. You count us. You count on us for programs that are both enlightening and entertaining.
It's a two-way relationship. We're here when you need us, and you step up with the support that makes it possible. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Right now, Wisconsin Public Radio is my wake-up in the morning. Joy Cardine takes me to work in the morning. It kind of gets me revved up if she's talking about an issue I'm passionate about. It gets me ready to go in the morning. And then on the way home, I'm really getting to like Central Time, and that takes me home at night. Honestly, I was listening to the WPR, I think it was the fall membership drive when I joined, and it was during Joy Cardine's show. I was on my way into work, and I was listening to these stories from other listeners, and I thought, you know, that should be me. I should be doing the same thing. As soon as I got into work, I got on the website and I contributed. I'm Bridget from Oak Creek, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Lori Skelton asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $5 a month or $10 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Pledge drives are an important time to hear from new members, and we've already had three new contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio since 5 o'clock, which is thrilling. So, thank you for your new contributions, except, are you the one that I'm talking to that hasn't made that contribution yet? If you aren't, take that step right now. So give to WPR.org. Go to our website, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. Make a contribution in any amount, and that's what makes you a member. When you do, you make the Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you count on every day possible.
At WPR, you choose how much to give. A contribution of any amount makes a difference. Here are some suggestions. Think about how much you pay per month for cable or Netflix or coffee. I like coffee. Which, like WPR, it's something you look forward to every day. Pledge now. You pick the amount. Your pledge makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
28 pledges to go and about 40 minutes to get them. We're asking you to keep us on track for this hour and for the drive. Help us meet this goal with your pledge, because you're funding something you rely on. We're relying on you right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's a little something to sweeten it up for you. If you pledge $15 a month, you can pick up your brand new design of the WPR travel mug from Clean Canteen. Make your pledge now in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret, and we're talking with Bill Ayers, author of Public Enemy, Confessions of an American Dissident. And Bill, I want to pick up with what happened after your name got out there and your affiliation with Barack Obama, your relationship with him, with which George Stephanopoulos sort of described as friendly. What did you decide to do at that point?
Now, George Stephanopoulos, I think, was quoting David Axelrod saying that we were friendly. And, you know, the truth is that we knew each other around Hyde Park. Hyde Park, Chicago, is a small neighborhood. And when he called me a guy around the neighborhood, which is how he responded, I thought that was just right. I didn't feel patronized in the least. I thought he was a guy around the neighborhood, too, before he was, you know, who he became. We would see each other in the bookstore, in the supermarket. We sat on a couple of boards together, nonprofit boards in Chicago, that supported community organizing and so on. And we spoke at conferences together, but we weren't like best friends sharing, you know, a milkshake with two straws. We knew each other. He knew thousands of people, and like millions of people, I wish I knew him better now. But what happened is, you know, I became kind of this figure in the media, and it was a cartoon character from my point of view. I mean, what the book really details is after the war in Vietnam ended, and interestingly, earlier when we were talking, I think I immediately get bogged down in the Vietnam War once again. I can't kind of stop myself. But the book really details what happened afterwards and, you know, how one tries to live a life, you know, true to the kind of passions and commitments that ignited my activism when I was a young man. How do you do that over a long period of time and in changing circumstances? And so when I looked at the book, I was surprised at how much of it is about teaching and parenting and moving, you know, into the areas of, that I care about. But as I say, in kind of a different time, but maintaining my kind of activist and radical edge on these things. So the campaign begins. My kids and my wife and my brothers and a lot of other close friends urged me to not participate in the media frenzy about Obama. And everyone felt that there was nothing to be gained and everything to be lost, that there was no way to be heard among the, you know, above the din. And so I didn't speak to the media for, you know, between April and November of 2008. I just turned away and I did my own work. I was writing a comic book at the time, and I spent every day sitting at my table working on my comic book. And then it passed by, and when it was over, I felt kind of off the leash, and I began to, you know, talk much more publicly again. And a few years later, decided to write this account of what happened, and that's Public Enemy.
Barack Obama was the second Democrat that you said you voted for in a presidential election. What was it about Obama that convinced you to vote Democratic?
Well, I voted for two Democrats in my adult life, and I had illusions about none of them and neither of them. First was George McGovern when he ran, you know, against the war in Vietnam, and second was Barack Obama when he ran as a young hopeful. A person who was, you know, against the continual kind of madness of this kind of never-ending war on terror. But when I say I had no illusions, what I mean by that is that all through the campaign, Barack Obama said, I'm a moderate, pragmatic, middle-of-the-road politician. And the right wing looked at him and said, no, 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 he's a secret Muslim socialist who pals around with terrorists and Palestinians. And the left looked at him and said, he says that, but I think he's winking at me. My take, having known him somewhat in his political career and as a guy around the neighborhood, was that he was absolutely accurate. He is a moderate, middle-of-the-road, pragmatic politician. So that's part of my take on him. And I write in the book a lot about how this, how to understand this and how to understand what our responsibility is given that. I think we spend far, far, far too much time, those of us who dream of a world of greater peace, greater joy, greater democracy, and greater justice. I think we spend too much time looking at the sites of power we have no access to, the White House, increasingly the Congress, the Pentagon, and far too little time looking at the sites of power that we have absolute access to, the neighborhood, the community, the street, the classroom, the workplace. And so that's where I tend to do my work. I don't really worry a lot about politicians and what they're going to give us. I worry much more about changing the conversation on the ground so that we can imagine a fairer, more just, more peaceful world and work toward it.
So you're doing your activism now at the local level. And I wonder, though, you know, given your roots with the Weather Underground, known for, you know, radical tactics targeting the political, you know, big political buildings, for instance, like the Pentagon. I wonder if, looking back, you're glad that you have kept a lot of your ideals, and you're still working at activism now, but a lot of the critiques of some of the activists in the Vietnam era was that they're now comfortably ensconced, you know, yuppies living in nice homes, and they don't really care that much about politics or social activism
anymore.
Well,
I care deeply about politics, and I think young people do too, but the reason I care about politics, and it's not quite true to say that I work only on local politics. I work nationally on issues like the defense of public education, which I think is under sustained attack, and like I'm part of the movement trying to end mass incarceration, trying to end the endless war. So I'm very much involved in the activism in Chicago and outside Chicago.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, do you feel that your generation of activists has sold out?
Not really. I mean, you know, what does it mean to sell out? You know, interestingly, after I wrote Fugitive Days, which was my first memoir about the years of the American War in Vietnam, everyone who interviewed me said, you don't look like weatherman. And I don't know what that means. You know, I'm trying to figure out does one of them look like? And increasingly, I mean, one of the funniest things that happened to me since the 2008 election is whenever I speak on campuses, I am picketed by the Tea Party. And there's a whole section in my book called Talking with the Tea Party. But what happens is after the controversy and after I'm allowed to come, say, to the University of Wyoming, when I come out on stage, I can almost feel the disappointment. They're looking for somebody who has fire coming out of his ears, and here's this old professor hobbling across the stage. Who is that? Mm. You know, where's the scary guy? So I think it's amusing. I think it's still the stereotype, but I don't make that comparative claim that you're implying. I think young people today are idealistic, hopeful, activist in many ways. And in Chicago, I could point you to the Immigrant Youth Justice League, for example, or the queer rights organizations around my university, who are fantastic and completely activist, and I think making a difference. I think if you look at the last 4 or 5 years, the people who made progress were the people who made noise. That's always the way it is. You know, that the immigrant youth and the queer movement and the women's movement made progress, whereas the peace movement and the voting rights, we slipped backwards. I think you have to be committed to not only the right ideas, but to mobilizing yourselves and being heard.
And Bill, we've only got about 30 seconds or so left, but I wonder, how do you feel about that next crop of activists coming up that you see at the university and beyond there in Chicago and elsewhere in the country?
Nothing but hope. I end the book in my acknowledgments by saying I've never been more hopeful for the future because of the young people I'm around every day. They are committed. They are clear-headed. They know way more than we knew. And in some ways, the mythology of the 60s is a place of perfect demonstrations and great music and great love affairs. It acts as a wet blanket on young people today. I think we should get over it. The 60s just was what it was. It's prelude to what we need to do now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We've been talking to Bill Ayers, the author of Public Enemy, Confessions of an American Dissident. And he'll be speaking at the Wisconsin Book Festival tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Capitol Theater in Madison.
Coming up, our next guest shares a handful of the best new songs and albums that have crossed his desk over at NPR. Stay tuned. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Central Time, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Rob Ferret here with Lori Skelton. We are here to tell you how important your support is. Your gift makes a huge difference. It's what keeps us going here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking to get 24 more pledges in the next 24 minutes, so it's your pledge right now that we are really looking for. We want to keep the momentum going. We want to meet this hour's goal. It's your support that's keeping all of Wisconsin Public Radio strong. So don't wait. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Central Time, you get the news of the day, both from the WPR News Department. We hear the news breaks. We talk to our reporters. We keep you up on what's going on. We also have interesting and fun conversations, like the one coming up about music you might want to check out, or science. We've heard great interviews about conversations about dinosaurs, things about language, lots of good stuff. Central Time, we hope. We're trying to make it this way, your go-to place for an informative and interesting afternoon.
But when you're putting together all of these interesting interviews, the one thing you can't worry about is raising the money. So that's what you, the listener members, are doing. Your financial support is a big part of what makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Listener support, now the single biggest piece of our funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So make that contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be like me. You pay a lot of your bills online. And like me, you probably don't miss all the extra paper and envelopes floating around the house, not to mention, you know, saving a little bit on the postage and the checks.
Well, support to Wisconsin Public Radio in that same streamlined way, you can do that by becoming a sustainer. Choose a monthly amount that works for you, $10, $20, whatever works. You sign up to have that come out of a credit card or a bank account, and this rolls over each year, so does your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. You're always current, and it's so easy to do at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Alec Baldwin. I'm here to remind you to think for a moment about how much you get from public radio. The events of the day discussed and analyzed by the most knowledgeable people, and compelling stories like the ones you hear on This American Life. You depend on programs like these, which is why
Radio Éxitos.
You really ought to pick up the phone and contribute now.
Tenemos aquí todos los éxitos.
Because until you do, we've reassigned Ira Glass to a Spanish pop station.
Todo el día.
You do like hearing This American Life, don't you?
Sígalo.
Well, then you need to ask yourself, what will it take to make you pledge? What do we have to do? How far do we have to go? Here's how you can end the shenanigans now.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during our fall membership drive. Rob Ferret here with Lori Skelton asking for your support of WPR. Thanks a lot if you've already given. Thanks in advance if you are just about to give. It's quick. It's easy. Just takes a few minutes at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Please give quickly so I can erase the mental image of Ira Glass with maracas from my brain. Think of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in your future listening. We're asking for just a few minutes of time right now, just a few dollars, and in return, you're going to get how many hours of great programs? It's a great bargain.
So donate at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. In just a few minutes, you'll have made a wise investment that pays dividends each and every day.
23 more pledges to go and 20 more minutes to get those pledges. It's your support that is so crucial right now to help us make this hourly goal. Be a part of making great radio happen. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You get to pick the amount you pledge, but if you give $15 a month, it comes out to $180. You can ask for your very own brand new design Wisconsin Public Radio travel mug with the new WPR logo on it. Pretty snazzy, I think. So that can be yours, along with, of course, all the great public radio programming you're helping to pay for. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much.
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Our next guest has an awesome job. He gets to hear all the best new music, curate it, and then share it with the rest of us. That's what he's here to do now.
Stephen Thompson is the curator for NPR's All Songs Considered, the creator of NPR's Tiny Desk Concerts, and a panelist on Pop Culture Happy Hour. He's also a former Wisconsinite. We like to toss that in there. Stephen, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be there. Thanks for having me.
So what have you been up to since we talked to you last?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'm making spaghetti right now.
Sounds good, actually. And how about music? Is this busy season for you getting all the new releases and albums?
Yeah, this is kind of we're in the last big push before the end of the year. The new releases kind of dry up around the end of October. And so right now it's just mainlining as much stuff as humanly possible before the end of the year. And then there's this kind of fallow period where everything goes away and we feverishly try to catch up, and that's when we put together our year-end top 10 lists and stuff. So it's still an exciting time as far as new stuff coming out every week.
So music it's just like apples. Really,
it's exactly like apples. You know? nice, crunchy albums.
Well, this time around, we're doing a song share because this is what you do. You listen to tons of new music. People send it to you, and they hope you like it. Well, you brought four songs that you, I think, like a lot. Tell us about one of them.
Yeah, let's start right off the top of my head with a song called "Fighting Fish" by a singer and rapper from Minneapolis named Dessa, who is just this incredible songwriter and lyricist. You know, she seems to me like she's a writer first and a performer second, which is not to take away from her pretty remarkable stage presence. She's fantastic, and she put out a great record back in June called Parts of Speech that I've been listening to a lot when I'm supposed to be listening to other stuff for work. So let's hear a little bit of Fighting Fish.
His cannons and some wingtips. Pilot pit in pocket, I'm riding with sinking engines. Around here, we don't like talk of big dreams. To stand out is a pride that can see. To aim high is to make waves, to split seams. But that's not what it seems like to me, cause I wanna try, I wanna risk.
Steven, you said she's a songwriter first and a performer second.
Well, I mean, let's say 1 and 1A, because I really don't mean that as a disparagement of her performances at all. But she's just a terrific writer and a terrific thinker, and just writes very, very smart, thoughtful, heartfelt music while weaving in a lot of references. That particular song references Greek philosophy. She's a remarkable artist, and I'm a really, really big fan, and this record that she put out this year is terrific.
I got to ask you, Rob and I, neither one of us had heard of anyone on the list that you send us. So does that mean, what I want to know is, does that mean that these people are really new and fresh and that they're so hip that you're just introducing them now and no one else has heard of them either? Or are Rob and I desperately unhip?
I would say a little from column A and a little from column B.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's hard to keep up with this stuff if it's not your job. You know, I always say that, you know, a lot of when I think of our audience, I think of people who love music and want to be up on music, but they also have mortgages to pay, and they also have, you know, kids to pick up from soccer practice or whatever fills people's daily lives, and so we try to do in the spirit of the University of Wisconsin, sifting and winnowing and figuring out what our favorite stuff is and then proselytizing about it, which is, as you said up top, it's a great job. We're very lucky. You know, every time I open the mail, it's like Christmas morning.
Good use of sifting and winnowing. Here's another one you sifted for us, Willis Earl Beale. We'll listen to it. It's the track is Coming Through.
A lot of people think that the lies they lead are the truth. They think that what they believe is the truth. They think that what they see is the truth. Well, I'm your boy Willis Earl Beale, and I don't believe that.
Willis Earl Beale there. Tell us about that one and why it made your shortlist today.
Fascinating singer-songwriter, kind of a wandering spirit. You know, for a long time, he was homeless and was leaving CDRs of his music around in public places for people to stumble onto. And now he's been fully discovered and put out really a terrific record this year. And that particular song, as it goes on, you know, as you heard, it's got this beautiful classic soul sound to it. And then the singer Cat Power comes in on the choruses and sings along with him. And it's really, really beautiful. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, his voice is just gorgeous.
Yeah, and it's this, you know, it's kind of this unpolished diamond a little bit, you know, because it's not like he's, you know, went through all sorts of formal training and has all this, you know, all this slick production. The first record he put out through a label, he recorded on a karaoke machine. and it sounds like it was recorded on a karaoke machine. And this particular record, this one is the first one that he has done as an official kind of studio artist, and it has that beautiful, rich, timeless soul sound.
I don't know why, but I think of Bill Withers when you tell the story and listening to that. One of my favorites.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, and you just love to see people like that get discovered, and you think of all the people who are still out there and all the brilliant music that has yet to be made.
I was really struck by one on your list called Renaissance with an exclamation mark at the end. It felt to me like there were about three songs within one song, so layered and so different. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite records of the year. It's by a group called San Fermin, and it's led by like a 24-year-old guy. You know, he looks about 17. His name is Ellis Ludwig Leone, and he crafted this this very this almost like folk rock opera almost, you know, self-titled record, and he recruited several singers. He doesn't actually sing his own songs, so he recruited this guy named Alan Tate, who has this big, deep, you know, rich voice, and then the two singers in a group called Lucius, which is a wonderful, you know, timeless kind of girl groupy thing, but you know, new, and so they sing, their voices are sort of woven back and forth, and the songs have these movements to them. It's very hard to describe. I just love it, though. It's just such a rich and beautiful sound with surprises springing up constantly.
All right, here's some of that.
A renaissance, another day to tiptoe on the balustrade. Get over you like anything I ever could.
Listening to that, it really is kind of scored like an opera. I think that's exactly right. And it's hard to just listen to a little bit of it. You really have to listen to the whole thing.
Well, especially as more voices come in.
There's some more now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful and you know, really, really heartfelt and sweet and gorgeous, and it just moves in all these different directions, and yet they're all satisfying.
This sounds like one that would be worth repeat listening.
Oh yeah, I'd love records like that reveal more every time you listen to them. You know, you feel like you're getting your money's worth.
So San Fermin, and the song is Renaissance.
Yes.
Okay. And then you picked one more for us. Best Coast is the group. The track is This Lonely Morning. Tell us a little about it before we give a listen.
Yeah, Best Coast is summer in a bottle. There's kind of a beachy. They started out as a very primitive kind of garage pop band, and over time their sound has gotten slicker and sunnier, even as the lyrics have all this is sadness and emotion and pathos to them, and so it's kind of chocolate covered misery, you know, where you bite in and then like ooh, and yet it just sounds so wonderful, and so you know, kind of this wistful end of summer quality that follows their music around when you listen to it. They've got a new they're calling it a mini album. It's like a 7-song EP called Fade Away that just came out, and the song that I picked is called This Lonely Morning.
All right, Best Coast, This Lonely Morning. It's almost like super up-tempo Cure.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, there are all these, you know, all these kind of classic influences, you know, of the last 50 years woven all the way through it.
And I was going to say Blondie.
I can see that too, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And so yeah, it's updating and revising something that already exists. It's not as format shattering as something like the San Fermin is, and yet it's, to me, so incredibly satisfying, and just one of those songs that's so painstakingly engineered to kind of open the throttle more and more as the song progresses, and it builds and builds. It's just a perfect little 2.5-3 minute pop song.
That's an awesome one to cook spaghetti to, or to
or to wallow. Either way,
to wallow. Either one.
That's right. I tend to wallow while cooking spaghetti. It's one of my specialties.
Yeah. They're more or less the same thing, right?
Yep.
All right, Stephen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
It's been fun. Stephen Thompson, the curator of NPR's All Songs Considered, the creator of NPR's Tiny Desk Concerts, and a panelist on the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast.
If you want to share a favorite new song from this fall, put your vote on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Rob Ferret here with Veronica Rickert. Thanks to everyone who is a sustainer or who has already contributed during this drive by mail. Thank you so much. As a public radio station, WPR relies on listeners like you for a large portion of our funding. It's the single biggest piece of our budget. If you haven't given yet, now is a great time to do it at WPR.org or 888. 202-2552.
And we are looking this hour for 17 more pledges to stay on track. Thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, help us stay on track now. You can do your part. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In our last hour, we blew past our goal, which is fantastic. It made up for some of the hours where we didn't quite meet that goal. Let's do it again this hour. I think we can. We could do it with your help, with your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you make your community a better place because you're an engaged, informed citizen. And when you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're doubling the good that you do.
That's because WPR is listener-supported. That means your financial support is the foundation of our budget. Your support makes this incredible service available to you and to everybody else in Wisconsin. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Is listening to WPR worth $4 a day to you? Well, consider becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members are listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs. $1,200 works out to less than $4 a day.
If you think you've been getting a lot of great value from WPR over the last year, consider a contribution that puts you in that 9XM Leadership Circle. Make your gift now of any amount because it all really does help at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe your situation has changed recently. One of our regular guests on the show, Patrick Rothfuss, who talks to us about board games and video games and storytelling, he tells a story about the first time he realized that he was not a broke writer anymore. He'd gotten his first paycheck for The Name of the Wind, gotten in advance from the publisher, and he pulled over on the side of the road and, you know, hooted and hollered and made his first pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio because he could finally afford it. So think about maybe something has changed for you recently and now you can afford to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You can make that choice at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We ask that you make a contribution. We also ask that you give an amount that's comfortable for you. Some people give $5 a month, some $100 or more a month, whatever the amount, we'll use it to support our programs and keep this information and this entertainment going strong. Give now whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Block with NPR News. We've thought long and hard about how to support the work we do here in public radio, and it's really quite a challenge. Our stations need support, our network needs support, but we really don't like to interrupt our programs to ask you. We like to keep the flow of information coming. Well, recently, we've come up with a new way to pay for public radio, and our solution is found in two words, the sustainer. The sustainer is a person who pays for public radio automatically each month. And as more people become sustainers, the need for on-air fundraising days like this goes down. More programming, less fundraising. It's a win-win proposition. So I ask you, please become a sustainer today. And thanks.
Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's the Central Time team here. I'm Rob Ferret with Veronica Rickert. Some of our producers are lurking in the background, hoping for a great end to this day of pledge drive. And you can make it happen with a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might appreciate WPR for the good it brings to the whole community. For you, WPR is personally important, but it might also feel that it's important for everyone in the state. I mean, think about it from that angle. Maybe you think it's important that everyone has access to high-quality information and entertainment.
Become a member with a contribution of maybe $5 a month. You're not doing something good just for you, but for the whole community. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you already renew by mail or make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can still get your pledge in the next couple of minutes for this hour's listening. And think of the many more hours of listening to come that you have. Pledge for that. Pledge for Wisconsin Public Radio and for the service that you enjoy. WPR.org. radio.org or 888-202-2552.
Wendy from Madison pledged. She says, WPR is my daily companion. Thank you, Wendy. Christy and Matthew from Stevens Point say they pledge because they listen to WPR every day. Thank you for your pledges. How about you? Do you listen every day? Put a dollar amount on it and make your pledge right now. You go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you. Thank you so much.